This is the ARC Energy Ideas Podcast with Peter Terzakian and Jackie Forrest, exploring trends that influence the energy business.
Welcome to the ARC Energy Ideas Podcast for May 24th, 2019. I'm Jackie Forrest.
And I'm Peter Terzakian. Welcome back. And I want to make an introduction here of our special guest. We've got Chris Lebicki, President and CEO of Modern Resources. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you for having me.
Great. So what's our agenda, Jackie?
Well, today we're going to talk a little bit about Modern Resources. First of all, just to introduce the company, we're going to talk about natural gas prices because Modern is a natural gas producer. Then we're going to talk about some unique things Modern is doing around environmental footprint. And Chris has a video out there that's gone, what did you call it?
Yeah, it's gone viral. Yep. You're a vlogger. And really, that's one of the reasons why we want to have you on the show, Chris. We want to talk about your role as an ambassador to the industry. I know many of our listeners have seen your video, been inspired by it. But before we get started, maybe just give our listeners a little bit of a background on yourself, a little bit on Modern Resources.
Sure, I'd be happy to. And I've learned something already. I haven't heard the term vlogger before,
yeah,
which tells
you
how social media savvy I am.
Chris, I didn't know about it either. Peter's really on. That's why I forgot the name. It's like viral.
These podcasts are informative.
Video blogger. Yeah.
So I'm an engineer by background. I spent a few years in operations, but most people would probably in the industry know me from my role as one of the founders of Watrous & Co., which was an investment bank we founded here in Calgary. In 1989, and we focused on energy transactions worldwide.
So that's like buying and selling companies.
Buying and selling assets, companies. We started here in Calgary when we sold it to Scotiabank. We had offices in London, Denver, Houston, Buenos Aires, Singapore, and Calgary.
Yeah, so you really understood, still understand the financial aspects of the business. But now you're an operator. You're actually on the other side. You're running a company.
I've crossed the street. We started Modern Resources 6 years ago. We were financed March of 2013, so a little over 6 years ago. We're Calgary-based, of course, backed by ARC Financial.
Mm-hmm. That's us.
And NCAP, our two main backers. And we operate just southwest of Grand Prairie. We have about 75% natural gas, 25% oil and liquids, and 25 employees. I think the best way to describe Modern Resources in a nutshell is we live up to our name. We're Modern Resources. So we have a modern asset base, a resource-based asset base. We have a modern balance sheet, low debt. We apply modern technology. We apply modern ethics. And we apply modern environmental standards. We're Modern Resources.
Let's talk about natural gas first, because I also know that that's on the minds of many of our listeners. The prices have been incredibly low compared to historical.
Yes. So natural gas, and as you said, you're 75% natural gas. I'm sure working hard to diversify like many natural gas producers. But AECO has averaged about $1.50 Canadian per gigajoule the last year and a half, if I exclude this last quarter when we had the very cold weather. And that is more than a 60% discount compared to the United States producers. Not only has it been low, but it has large swings from day to day, is volatile and unpredictable. And we covered what we call a crisis in the natural gas industry in January on one of our prior podcasts.
Yeah, let me put that in $1.50 Canadian per gigajoule at AECO. AECO is the dominant Alberta trading hub. I mean, for a long time in the, I would say between 2003-ish, I'm just sort of taxing my memory, to 2012-ish, I mean, AECO would be well above $6. And to think that it would go to $3 would have been catastrophic. And here we are at $1.50.
And it's not for a short time period.
A lot of the gas, we like to say in some parts, comes out of the ground for free. But then we have companies like Modern that are adapting to that new realities on the gas side.
But, you know, it has impacted us. We are 75% gas. We drilled two natural gas wells last year. We're going to drill no natural gas wells this year. 2 years ago, 2017, we would have spent capital expenditure about $120 million. This year, it's going to be less than $50 million. So we've curtailed our capital expenditure significantly. We're focusing on oil. So, you know, in rigs perspective, 2 years ago, we would have operated three rigs, two natural gas, one on the oil side. This year, in 2019, we're running, I would say, half a rig, one oil rig half the year.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say we've adapted, I feel like we're a company that operates best in fifth gear and we're in first gear.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no question that a lot of the dialogue, even on our podcast, Jackie, is on the oil side, but the natural gas side is really been devastated. in terms of price. And that does also affect investment, which we talked about on our last podcast.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're cutting back. So obviously, I think your production declining?
Our natural gas production is definitely declining.
But the industry as a whole is not seeing decline. So that's been the most astonishing thing here. We've had such low prices, arguably lower than the cost for replacing the declines, because natural gas wells all naturally decline. But yet supply has remained robust at about 16 BCF per day for the last couple of years. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I would disagree a bit. I think it is declining. There is a lag. And when I say it's declining, the absolute volumes have not yet declined, and for a few reasons. One is people have hedges in place, and for now that's carrying a lot of people. Two, we have the liquids-rich natural gas that people are essentially drilling for the liquids. The natural gas is becoming a byproduct. But I'd also point to events such as the recent Trident situation, where they basically just tossed in the keys, handed over all the liabilities to us, the people of Alberta. And I would say that's not the last one. We're heading into a very ugly summer. I'd be shocked if there weren't more Tridents in the
coming Trident
weeks.
Was a company that was
went
dominantly
bankrupted.
Yeah. And it was not insignificant either.
4,700 wells were turned over for the province to deal with. So, and I, as I say, I think it's not the last one. But and also, I think it reflects in rig count. And I get these numbers from you two. We talked about it this morning. That a year ago, we had 350 rigs working in Alberta. Today, we have 200. Mm-hmm. So that's over a 40% drop in the last year. And last year was not a banner year. That's down from 600 a few years earlier. So I think we will see the impacts of natural gas prices, and volumes will begin to curtail.
Mm-hmm. One of the other situations is that you're seeing the AECO price as a small producer, but some of the larger producers have taken space on these export lines, so they actually realize the prices in Chicago or the U.S. in California, and so they're not affected by today's prices. First of all, could you talk a little bit about, you know, what the barriers are for companies like yourselves to be able to access those other markets to get those higher prices?
Yeah, I mean, basically, in a nutshell, all roads out of Dodge are full. There's no more roads out of Dodge. There's two things that I think as a small producer that impact that. One is it just takes too long through the regulatory process to get more pipeline capacity built, and it is happening. It takes a minimum of 3 years. Why is that? Why can't we build pipe where we already have pipe in a year? And it's really the regulatory process. It takes us so long to build new pipe. And building new pipe is not the entire answer, but it's part of the answer. So one, it takes too long, and it's two, it's tough for the small guys to participate because you have to make commitments for such a long period of time, 15 or 20 years. My company is 6 years old. To make commitments for 15 to 20 years is unimaginable. And of course, we had this situation last year or 2 years ago now, maybe, when there was a capacity available out of Alberta, and the winning bid was for a 114-year commitment.
You know, it's just crazy.
Yeah, exactly. It's incomprehensible. One, the terms are just way too long for the small producers. And the other big issue we face is the credit capacity that you have to put on the table in order to gain access to the system. And just to put it in perspective, from Modern's perspective, we are very conservatively financed. We have low debt, less than 1x cash flow. We were looking a year ago to get more capacity. To do that, we would have had to put a letter of credit out to the pipeline company for over $50 million for a period of 3 years. So all of a sudden, we'd go from 1x cash flow to 2x cash flow overnight over a period of 3 years. In other words, we have no more capital available to put in the ground. And that's just too onerous of an obligation for too long for a small producer.
Right. So for small producers like yourselves, and you know, you're not actually that small, but it's called lower mid-sized, you have to put up $50 million cash upfront to be able to get access to pipeline capacity to take your gas to market.
We do. We have to put a letter of credit. Now, in fairness to the pipeline, they don't draw on that, and they may not call on it day one, but we have to have the capacity to do that. So from my perspective as the producer, from day one, it's spoken for. And in fairness, you know, they're usually quite good at predicting the costs. So it would be unlikely that the costs double. But if they do, then I have to step forward and double my letter of credit, which I can't do. And it's theoretically for a period of 3 years until it's on production, and then it goes into the pool. But if for some reason it takes 4 years, then I'm on the hook for 4 years. So between the quantum amount and the time, it's for a small producer, it's too much to bear.
Yeah. It's definitely not a level playing field in terms of access to markets and opportunities. And that's a point that was made actually in the report that the government issued in December of 2018 with 48 recommendations of how to fix the market. And some of these issues were part of that. Now, the new UCP government has put in their platform document that they have a goal of revitalizing the natural gas industry. And there's a whole bunch of things there that they want to do, like increase the speed of regulatory approvals, to your point, work with the NEB on ways to increase throughput and reduce price volatility, facilitate LNG. And they appointed an associate deputy minister for natural gas within the Department of Energy called Dale Nally. He's an MLA from Morningville, St. Albert. And so I think it's great that they've put focus on this. We've never had a natural gas minister, associate minister.
Yeah, I think that's quite positive. Again, so much of the proverbial oxygen in the room is about oil and oil sands. And natural gas is really the prevalent resource in Western Canada. I mean, there's just so much natural gas that it really is worthy of representation in government on its own and an associate minister.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was a fantastic move to have a separate minister in charge of natural gas, because although from a royalty perspective today, and you two would know this better than I, it's very much the little brother to oil royalties. But from an activity perspective, meaning employment, drilling rigs, construction, completions, natural gas is still a very big part of the Alberta economy. Yep. So a vibrant natural gas industry is important even today. And of course, if prices improve, the royalties would also improve from the provinces.
Yeah, but I think you bring up an excellent point about the employment, because if you think specifically about the oil sands, it's heavily concentrated in one part of the province around Fort McMurray. But as you point out, natural gas occurs all the way from northwest Alberta all the way down to the southeast to Medicine Hat. Alberta perspective, and from the government of Alberta's perspective, to put emphasis on it, because employment is broad-based, right?
From a modern perspective, you know, we had, again, 2 years ago, two natural gas rigs running full-time, and, you know, you can use different numbers, but say in total that employs about 150 people per rig. Today we're running none. And so that's 300 people out of work.
Yeah, and that's, Jason Kenney, Premier Kenney, has campaigned on a platform of jobs. And so this is going to have to be addressed. And so we'll see what the minister is going to do. But what advice do you have, beyond the regulatory reform for the government?
Well, Minister Nally has reached out to Modern already. I have spoken to him, and he's reached out to many of my colleagues. I know that because we've talked about it. And so has David James, the associate minister. Yeah, so we've spoken to him as well. So I give him full marks for getting up to speed on issues and reaching out to the community. So we will be hopefully meeting with them both in the near term. I'd give a few pieces of advice. One is to follow up on some of the recommendations of the Natural Gas Advisory Panel. That was an excellent report with 48 recommendations. Obviously, all 48 will not be implemented, and they don't have to be implemented exactly as written. But there are some key areas that we certainly hope the governments will move on. There's other levers the government can pull as well. We talked about the credit requirements for small producers to get access to pipeline. Maybe there's some ideas such as credit backstop that could assist the industry quite a bit, because although we call ourselves small producers, we do account for much of the drilling activity. So allowing us access to the pipeline going forward is important for activity and looking forward. And the other, maybe I should have said it first, piece of advice is urgency. We need to address this. This is going to be a very bad summer for natural gas in Alberta. We talked about Trident. I suspect this summer we'll see some more.
Yeah, I mean, companies cannot sustain these price levels forever, and they've had to live with them for quite a while now.
And they have a lot of fixed costs, and Trident talked about it when they threw in the keys about municipal taxes, landowner taxes, and these are real costs, and the landowner should get paid. But but it's a real issue too when they have no revenue.
No, there's a lot of repercussions, you know, spin-off effects of a company like Trident going under in terms of many economic factors, all the way down to abandonments and liabilities, the things you brought up. So clearly, the prize is large in terms of understanding and remedying some of these situations around natural gas. But let's move on to something that I know you're quite proud of, the environmental improvements and performances that you've made in the field. And that has been rewarded recently. Modern Resources named Energy Excellence Awards champion for cutting methane emissions.
Yeah, we're very proud of that. When we started Modern 6 years ago, we put out on our website, it's still there today, it hasn't changed. In the 6 years, we put out a checklist of 9 items that we thought make the best oil and gas company. What kind of oil and gas company is a leader in the industry, is the highest valued? What are the attributes? And we came out with a list of 9 items. I would say numbers 2 to 9 come from my career in investment banking. What kind of assets, what kind of companies sold for the highest valuation, had the most interest, performed the best? Item number 1 on our checklist is HSE performance, health, safety, and the environment. And we put that at the top of our list, not by accident, because it drives and leads everything we do. It's in our DNA. So we did that 6 years ago because we thought it was a good thing to do, a smart thing to do, the right thing to do. I'd say 6 years later, boy, are we ever glad we did that. It's become a bigger and bigger issue, and we are ahead of the curve on the issue. So we take great pride in that. We're not done. And other firms are doing good things as well, but we're very proud of the things we've done.
So what have you done to get the award, to reduce your methane emissions?
Well, we won the award this year. The Dale Bolden had this competition, and we won for operational excellence for methane reduction. We won for the same reason last year at the Global Petroleum Show against an international field of competitors, award for environmental excellence for the same reason. So what we won the award for is what we call MUSE sites, modern ultra-low emission sites. So we started this on our natural gas sites, but it also applies on our new oil sites now. We went away from pneumatic devices in the field. You don't have power at our sites, at most sites in Canada. You can't plug in, so you have to provide power from somewhere. So the power to actuate your pumps and valves historically around the world, including Canada, comes from the pressure of the gas, the methane, and then you release it. So when you walk onto a natural gas site virtually anywhere in the world, you hear a psst.
That's very good, Chris.
And that's the, yeah. Best imitation
well, so
that, I can
so the
do.
Natural gas is, the pressure from the natural gas is actually being used to turn the valve.
Turn the valve, and then it's released.
Yeah.
And methane, of course, is a very strong greenhouse gas. So we set out to reduce that. And, you know, we never initially said we're going to go to zero, but the net result of our effort is we went to zero. We managed to completely eliminate methane emissions on our sites. We call them ultra-low emission sites because we still emit a tiny bit of CO2. And I mean a tiny bit, but in good faith, we can't call them zero emission sites. So we call them modern ultra low emission sites or MUSE sites. So we've completely eliminated the use and emission of methane gas on our natural gas sites and on our oil sites now as well. And we won awards for it, which is very nice. It makes you feel good. But we also share that with other companies because this is not a modern issue. This is a global issue.
Yeah, it's a global issue. But I've, you know, been talking to you about this off air, I know that the other real benefit of this, or the thing, is a culture that you've built in your field operators. You know, they've now, as you said, they've got it in their DNA, right? That they're so conscious about even emitting one molecule.
They're proud of it, and I'd say there's also a practical element. First of all, I'm glad you mentioned our operators. We're very proud of this work. We win this award here in Calgary. We never, in 1,000 years, would have been able to accomplish this without our operators' 100% buy-in. Because when we started this effort 4 years ago now, it took us about 2 years to figure it out. How can we do this and it actually works and it doesn't cost us more and it operates well? And we tried some things at the beginning that didn't really work. And it was our operators who were out there in February at, you know, minus 20 at 2 in the morning, fixing things, getting it back on stream, and giving us the feedback. You know, listen, this isn't working. You know, instead of zigging, we should zag on this because this is not working. So I want to give them kudos and full credit. We never would have accomplished this without them. But now that it's in, it's less maintenance, it's less operations for them, it's more operationally reliable, our on-stream time has increased, our operating costs are lower. If we ever went to our operators now and said, we've changed our mind, we're going to go back to pneumatic devices, I think they'd all quit. You know, they don't want to operate like that. This is much better. It was very intentional. We came at it. This is going to be, as I say, it's number one on our list. It's always been there from day one, and it's in our DNA. Mm-hmm. It's just the right thing to do.
Yeah, we talked about on our previous podcast how important that is in terms of attracting capital and making a positive impression on the investment community. And, you know, those views have substantially hardened since you were in the investment banking business.
Well, you know, when I was, I spent 17 years in the investment banking business, and we, when I left in 2006, we did not talk about methane release. We did not talk about CO2 emissions. It was not, it was coming on the radar, but it wasn't discussed yet. And that's only, 13 years ago. Today, I'd say it's top of the list. You know, it's the first thing. When I present Modern at conferences or to investors, we address the HSE, Health, Safety, and Environment, first and foremost. It's the first thing we talk about because it's the biggest, outside of low natural gas prices, is probably the biggest headwind our business faces, yet our industry seldom even talks about it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why that is. And so when I present Modern, I talk about it first and foremost because it's important to people, it's on their minds. And I also find it deflates the whole issue. It matters to us too. We care and we're doing something about
it. Yeah, I mean, you're taking what you called a headwind and turning it into a tailwind.
Yeah.
And I think that's phenomenal and awesome. Now, that takes us to your personal ambassadorship in terms of being a viral vlogger.
Yeah, that's right. So you have, and we will put a link to Chris's video called Canadian Energy Leadership on the show notes of this podcast. But you've had, tell me, how many viewers have you had of your video?
It's something over 140,000.
140,000. And when did that get released?
In November of last year.
So 6 months or so. And phenomenal response to that video. Has it surprised you?
It shocked me. It's the one and only thing I've ever posted on social media. So it's a good start, I guess. But I put it on the, actually I didn't do it. We had a 20-year-old co-op student from Mount Royal University who I asked to record one of my talks and asked her to put it on YouTube because I spoke a week or two earlier at a conference for teachers in Edmonton. And after I spoke, 10 or 15 teachers came up to me and said, I really enjoyed that. I'd love to share that with my class. Where are you on YouTube? And of course, it never occurred to me to put it on YouTube, but I came back to the office and her name's Elena. I said, Elena, get me on YouTube. So she did. She charged me a whopping $250. And I thought 20 or 30 school teachers would watch it, and mission accomplished. And she posted it, and within a couple of days, I just started getting inundated with phone calls and emails and LinkedIn.
That's fabulous. Just for those who have not seen the video, just give us a general premise. I know it starts out with you. I think you're in your Ontario cottage.
I really have three messages. And when I was putting it together, my mindset was, who am I aiming this at? And I thought, you know, there's probably 10%, and I'm making these numbers up, but there's probably 10% of the population who is, I would say, extreme environmentalist, and there's really no discussion to be held. And similarly, there's maybe 10% on the other side who are climate change deniers, and there's no discussion to be held. And frequently, the energy debate is putting those two in a room and say, let's talk energy. And, you know, that's not a constructive discussion. So I was really aiming at the 80% in the middle who may lean one way or the other, and I respect people's views. And let's have an informed discussion. This is not an easy subject. If it was easy, it'd be solved by now. So let's just have an informed, intelligent discussion. So that was my mindset. And I really tried to give that through three messages. One, the world needs energy, all kinds of energy, you know, solar, wind, thermal, oil and gas, and nuclear. We need them all. We have an energy-starved world. Two, no one is better on this planet at providing energy than Canadians. We are and should continue to be leaders at it, all forms of energy. And three, let's get our mojo back. Let's get our courage back. You know, every one of us in this country lives the standard of living we do because in the past decades, we've had the courage to build things. Today, we've been stuck in a regulatory quagmire. We're building nothing. And that is not for the long-term benefit of Canadians. We need to get back and build things. We have to consult. We have to build them to the highest environmental standards in the world, because that's what we do here in Canada. But let's get our mojo back. Let's start building. So in a nutshell, that's the talk.
Yeah. Well, it definitely is great to educate people, but also I think educate people on the facts about Canadian energy. So what has surprised you in terms of the reaction and comments that you've gotten?
Well, you know, I was overwhelmed, but I think when I stood back and thought about it, why did this resonate with people? And people across the country, I spoke in Toronto earlier this week. You know, it's not just in Alberta that it has resonated. I think the reason it struck a chord with people is I think people are frustrated. You know, after two decades of bickering among governments, regulators, special interest groups, the energy industry, we've got nowhere. And I think people are feeling frustrated. Like, these are important issues. They should be addressed. But let's start moving forward. And so I think there's just a general frustration in the country that we're too much infighting and we're not enough progress.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an understatement in terms of where we're at, and really applaud you, Chris, as I know many others do.
I'll give you one anecdote. I went to see the movie First Man with my wife in December, and it's about Neil Armstrong landing on the moon. And I was sitting there in the movie theater, and we don't go to movies very often, but I'm sitting there in the movie theater, and in the movie, they show John F. Kennedy's famous speech from May of 1961, where he said, before this decade is out, the United States will put a man on the moon and bring him home safely. And 8 years, 2 months later, in July of 1969, and so in 2 months, it'll be 50 years, but in July year of 69, 8 years, 2 months later, Neil Armstrong stepped on the moon. In 8 years, in 2 months, they put a man on the moon. There was no book they could refer to, you know, Man on the Moon for Dummies. They had to invent everything, design it, build it, test it, and they did it. It took us, you know, fast forward to Canada today, it took us almost 7.5 years to approve Shell LNG. We didn't invent LNG. It's being produced all over the world. The people are eating our lunch while we sit here and bicker. It's going to be 14 years before it's up and going. Mm-hmm. They put man on the moon in 8 years. It's going to take us 14 years to do what's already being done all over the world. What happened to us?
Yeah, I mean, I remember the landing on the moon vividly. So I mean, just sort of showing my age. But, you know, there was just such a feeling of hope, such a feeling of, you know, one for all for one. And I guess getting back to, you know, your ambassadorship and trying to build that hope on that video, we need more of this.
But I think it's every senior executive's mandate and role in this industry, not just CEOs, to advocate for our business. I'd say I spend about a third of my time on advocacy. And anybody who's not advocating, I would be so blunt as to say they don't understand their job. Because if you think about it, outside of oil and natural gas prices, which we are more of a follower on, you can't control those, what element of this industry is a bigger headwind than the social and environmental issues we face? So as any senior executive in this industry, if you're not dedicating significant time to it, you are neglecting your job.
But I do want to come back to this point of being on video, because, you know, Chris, what you really did was you said, you know what, actually, I'm not a CEO so much. I'm just one of you. I'm a Canadian. You know, I don't wake up in the morning and think of, I'm going to trash the environment. I'm here. I'm part of the solution. It was just a very positive message that was so exposing you as an individual, which is so important. And that's really what I'm getting at.
I think you have to put yourself out there, because it's very easy to dislike or even hate or distrust an industry.
Yeah,
it's much more difficult to hate or distrust a human being, a person. Yeah. And when you realize you share the same goals, I care about the environment as much as anybody else. You know, I have a family, I have children, I enjoy Canada's outdoors from coast to coast. It's very important to me. Nothing is more important to me. I'm a very passionate Canadian. So I think when you humanize it, you start to realize you have some common ground and not just differences.
All right. So you said you're working on a second video. When should people expect the sequel?
In the coming months. No time frame. There was really no time frame to the first one either. It was really motivated by a talk I was asked to give, and that forced me to put some thoughts down. But I have started on a second one and do intend on putting it out, this year.
Yeah.
No timeline.
Well, we're looking forward to it. We'll promote it when it comes out. And
appreciate
we're
that.
Really hoping that we get, close to 130,000 listeners to this podcast. And all those folks come back and want to hear more from you through the podcast. So really appreciate your thoughts and your leadership in the industry on these important issues.
Yeah. Thanks so much to Chris Lubicki, President and Chief Executive Officer of Modern Resources.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Thanks for joining today's podcast. If you like the podcast, please rate us on your podcast app and tell someone else about us.
For more ideas and insights, visit arcenergyinstitute.com.